This is the Retirement Lifestyle Advocates Radio Program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to listen in today. Hey, joining me on today's program is Carrie Lutz, but not in the capacity that a guest expert would normally join me. I appeared as a guest expert on Mr. Lutz's program this past week, and I'm going to share with you a bit of our conversation in segments 2 and 3 of today's program. You know, I'm going to talk in a minute about Social Security, and it's a really important topic given a report that was released this last week called A Secure Retirement for All that deals with how many Americans are living in retirement. I'll get to that in just a moment. But first, if you have not yet requested the March special report, it is the little black book on Social Security maximization. I'll be happy to send you a copy of the book, which was on the Amazon bestseller list when it was released. All you need to do to get your copy of the book is visit requestyourreport.com. The website, again, is requestyourreport.com. Just let me know where to mail that book, and I will be very glad to do so. You know, I can't believe I am going to do this. I am going to quote Bernie Sanders on this week's radio program. Now, to be candid, I don't have a lot in common with Mr. Sanders when it comes to opinion on public policy, but this past week, Mr. Sanders, I should say Senator Sanders, did bring to light an important study regarding the financial health of many retirees in America. Now, Mr. Sanders released a report outlining the current state of retirement in the United States. The report was titled A Secure Retirement for All. In fact, I have a link to the report on my website at retirementlifestyleadvocates.com. If you'd like to reference it, I would encourage you to do that. But one of the most startling facts revealed in the report is that half of all Americans age 65 and older are living on less than $30,000 a year. Now, the report also stated that nearly half of all Americans are at risk of a financially insecure retirement. That's up from about one-third of all Americans 40 years ago. Now, the report offered up solutions that, frankly, I could have predicted without reading the report. Mr. Sanders refers to these proposed changes as strengthening the Social Security program. Change one proposed by Sanders is put more money into Social Security, which Sanders calls, quote, the most successful program in our nation's history, end quote. And change two, forcing workers to save for retirement via payroll deduction and then offering those workers a guaranteed monthly income at retirement. So proposed change one, put more money into the Social Security program. Proposed change two, force workers to save for retirement via payroll deduction and then give them a guaranteed monthly income at retirement. Now, I went back and did a little bit of history study. Social Security began back in 1935, and ever since the program began, changes made to strengthen the program have always come with the outcome of making the program weaker. Now, I'm not suggesting that people should live on less than $30,000 a year during retirement. Don't get me wrong here. However, every time a change has been made, the evidence is irrefutable that Social Security has become weaker financially. And I'm not sure if Senator Sanders made this connection, but when you describe Social Security as the most successful program in our nation's history, that seems to be, at least in my view, borderline delusional. I don't know how you can describe a program that has a current underfunding level of more than $60 trillion as a successful program. Now, the reality is that the Social Security program has been thoroughly mismanaged by the collective group of Washington politicians over the years. And that is not how I, anyway, and probably many of you, would define a successful program. Now, I find it interesting that Sanders is suggesting forced savings through payroll deductions and then a guaranteed income later in life, because that is exactly how Social Security was defined at the program's inception nearly 90 years ago. What Sanders undoubtedly means is more forced savings. That means higher taxes and more income at retirement. Should I say maybe more income at retirement? So it seems that Sanders and others want to attempt to remedy retirement poverty by doing more of what got us here. Now, Albert Einstein is widely credited with stating that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again while somehow expecting to get a different results. Now, there are those who say that you cannot attribute that saying to Einstein, but regardless, it's an appropriate quote for the discussion. Now, here is the harsh reality. The brutal truth is there is no money to strengthen the Social Security program. I'll talk about this more momentarily. Now, for some Social Security perspective, I want to share with you what President Franklin Roosevelt had to say about Social Security at the program's inception. And I am quoting, "Young people have come to wonder what would be their lot when they came to old age. The man with a job has wondered how long the job would last. This Social Security measure gives at least some protection to 30 million of our citizens who will reap direct benefits through unemployment compensation, through old age pensions, and through increased services for the protection of children and the prevention of ill health. We can never insure 100% of the population against 100% of the hazards and vicissitudes of life. We have tried to frame a law which will give some measure of protection to the average citizens and to his family against the loss of a job and against poverty-ridden old age. This law, too, represents a cornerstone in a structure which is being built, but is by no means complete. It is a structure intended to lessen the force of possible future depressions. It will act as a protection to future administrations against the necessity of going deeply into debt to furnish relief to the needy. The law will flatten out the peaks and valleys of deflation and inflation. It is, in short, a law that will take care of human needs and at the same time provide the United States with an economic structure of vastly greater soundness," end quote. Now, despite President Roosevelt's words, this program has not flattened out the peaks and valleys of deflation and inflation. It's really added to them. And future administrations have gone deeply into debt to furnish relief to the needy because Social Security alone is $61 trillion underfunded. Now, to dig into how Social Security has changed, you have to go back to 1935 when Social Security was initiated. At the time, it was a perfect political scheme. To receive full retirement benefits from Social Security, you had to be 65 years old, which was the full retirement age under the program. At the time, the average life expectancy of an American was 61. Average life expectancy, 61, full retirement age, 65. It was a perfect political victory and a perfect tax revenue victory in the beginning. However, since 1950, the average life expectancy of both an American man and an American woman has increased 2 years every decade. So the original actuarial assumptions of Social Security were sound. Over time, because of increasing life expectancies, they have become a lot less sound. Now, over time, there were changes made to the Social Security program that were not unlike the changes that Senator Sanders is now proposing. And each change brought about higher taxes. Initially, beginning in 1937, workers and employers each paid 1% of the workers' annual wages into Social Security, up to a maximum of $3,000 in earnings. Laughably, one of the first publications released by the government declared that the 1% tax rate was, quote, the most you will ever pay, end quote. By 1950, 13 years later, the tax had increased 50% to 1.5%. Then in 1956, disability benefits were added to the Social Security program, probably described then as strengthening the program. In 1975, in the wake of massive inflation, an automatic cost of living adjustment was added to the program. As many of you listeners are undoubtedly aware, Social Security benefits paid to beneficiaries are linked to the officially reported inflation rate, and they can increase each year based on this rate of inflation. Now, Social Security taxes have increased to reflect these increased costs, rising to more than 5% on the first $25,000 in wages by 1980, and today, they're 6.2% for the employee and 6.2% for the employer on the first $168,600 in wages. Despite these increases in taxes, despite the increase in the wage threshold at which Social Security benefits taxes are paid, we have a program that is now $61 trillion underfunded. Now, I'll talk more about this in the last segment of today's program, but before I go to the break and get to my interview with Carrie Lutz, let me remind you that if you'd like to get a copy of the Little Black Book on Social Security Maximization, you can go to requestyourreport.com, and I'll be very glad to send you a copy. Again, the website, requestyourreport.com. I'll be back after these words. I'm Dennis Tubergen. You are listening to RLA Radio. This segment is an interview that I did with Carrie Lutz. Carrie, who is the founder of the Financial Survival Network and host of the radio show and TV show by the same name, invited me on the program to give him my take as to what's going on in the current economy. I thought I'd share that interview with you in this segment. Before we get to that, though, if you have not yet requested the March report, which is the Little Black Book on Social Security Maximization, I'd invite you to go to requestyourreport.com and get your copy. It's absolutely free. I'll send it to you without any further obligation. Again, that's the Little Black Book on Social Security Maximization. It's yours by visiting the website requestyourreport.com. And now let's get to the interview that I did with Mr. Carrie Lutz.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Hey, we're just in the first week of March. So much is happening on the economic front. So much that gets overlooked. We're seeing gold, Bitcoin hitting record highs. We're seeing deficits, as far as the eye can see, multi-trillion dollar deficits per year. Where is it all going to end? Is this sustainable? Can it continue? What about real estate? Where are the real estate markets heading? Dennis Tubergen is with us now, well-known financial expert, author, and radio guy as well. Dennis, great to have you back on the show. Hey, how have you been?
Gary, I've been great. Always a pleasure to chat with you, both on and off the official recording. So appreciate being with you.
Hey, well, we're at that special point in life, you and I, where we get to sit back a little bit, take it easy, and enjoy the fruits of our labor. And we get a front row seat on the financial insanity and geopolitical craziness that's taking place here. And look, we live in a connected world. Everything is connected. You know, if the butterfly flaps its wings down in South America, then you're going to get a hurricane in Florida. You know, everything's interconnected. As far as economy, deficit, inflation, all these good things, they're all connected here. What are you seeing?
Well, I think the first word that comes to mind, Carrie, when you start looking at some of the economic data that's being reported and has been reported is artificial. Just to give an example, fourth quarter GDP increased $343 billion, according to the latest revision. That sounds like great news. But at the same time, when you look at U.S. government debt, that was up $843 billion. And as I'm sure many of our viewers, listeners are aware, when you calculate gross domestic product, government spending is part of that. So where is the economy really without this deficit spending that is on track for probably $2 trillion this year would be my guess. That's before an election year giveaway, which I would also expect. So, we have artificial growth in GDP. I think the real economy is contracting. And I think, if the government was forced to operate with a balanced budget, we would be in a severe recession at this point. And, I'm not convinced we're not there.
Hey, so Dennis, when Bernie Madoff was booming, when business was booming, he was a positive contributor to the GDP numbers, right? And then when he blew up, he was a negative contributor to the GDP numbers. I mean, it's all just a Ponzi scheme, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it really is. And, I just did a piece on my radio show that asked, is this growth or is it cash flow? I mean, if I make $100,000 a year, that's my personal GDP. If I go borrow another $100,000, my cash flow looks great. But did my personal GDP just go to $200,000? Or did I just increase my cash flow by $100,000 at the expense of my future GDP? And that's exactly what we have here is a Ponzi scheme. And Ponzi schemes, by their very nature, eventually explode. They implode, I should say, because you've got to find new people to lend us money. And that well will run dry.
Hey, could you imagine if Bernie Madoff had access to a printing press? He'd still be at it.
Yeah, and undoubtedly making big political contributions with the printing press proceeds.
That's for sure. Hey, so interest rates, they stabilized a bit, then they went down a little bit, then they went back up a bit. But long term, they've got to go up, don't they?
Well, I think so. I mean, if you take a look at the level of debt the U.S. government has, I read an amazing statistic, Carrie. I guess I knew it, but not necessarily, haven't really put it in these terms. U.S. government debt increases $1 trillion every 100 days. When you think about it, that's unfathomable. Now, when you think about every 100 days at 5% interest, having to finance another $1 trillion, that's $50 billion that gets added to just servicing the debt, the new debt, every 100 days. So over the course of a year, that's $150 billion. And, we've got a snowball rolling downhill, and the bigger it gets, the bigger it gets. So at some point, this has to blow up.
Yeah, I would think the only surprise to me, quite frankly, Dennis, is that it's taken as long as it has.
Well, Carrie, if I were to have guessed timing, I would have been wrong several times in the past as well. I mean, I just don't. It's just hard to fathom the fact that now I think interest costs on the U.S. government debt are in excess of $1 trillion a year. To put that in perspective for our listeners, Social Security, I think by the latest report, was underfunded by $61 trillion, and the annual outlay for Social Security is only $1.35 trillion. So interest on the debt is very closely approaching what the entire outlay for Social Security is. That is a crazy, crazy number.
Huh. Yeah, that is. That is insane, and especially since I started collecting it recently. Maybe I should just do full retirement and get the most I can because this thing's going to blow up, or do I wait till I'm 70? I mean, that's a question I have, Dennis, and many of you out there have that question. Do you early retire at 62 if you can do it, if you have no income, or do you, then you might need to, or do you do it at your full retirement age, which right now is, I think, close to 67? What are you supposed to do here?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I think ultimately it depends on what the policy response is. Under normal circumstances, I mean, I've looked at Social Security. I'm not old enough to collect it yet. I have age 70 in my sights. Ultimately, if the federal government continues to operate with these huge deficits, which it appears, as you said at the outset, it appears this is going to be the policy for as far as the eye can see. If that's the case, then I think you've got to have the Fed go back and become the lender of last resort. Christopher Waller, the Fed governor last week, just kind of dropped a quiet bombshell saying, hey, the Fed has to get rid of more mortgage-backed securities, and what we need to do is add more short-term U.S. treasuries to our portfolio. I found that was interesting, given that this emergency bank lending program that was put in place a year ago expires March 11. So now all these emergency funds are going to dry up, and the timing was quite interesting that the Fed now says we need to add to our short-term U.S. treasury holdings. So, you know, I think the Fed has not quit creating currency. They can't go back and use the term quantitative easing because it would incriminate them. But I think essentially that's what's going to happen. So I believe Social Security, to get back to that point, I think you're going to collect your benefits. I just think they're going to buy a lot less than they do today. And given this policy, I don't see how we avoid a highly or hyperinflationary outcome.
Yeah, well, arguably in places like New York, they're already having it. So not to get into the political thing about the former president or the current occupant of the White House, because this is a family show after all, right? But when you look at like the truckers strike there, boycott of New York City, and I don't know, you can't believe the media because they lie about everything, but it certainly appears something's happening in New York. They're already close to hyperinflation. The taxes are out of control. They just put a congestion tax. You drive into the city, you get taxed. Where does New York City wind up in all this?
We were talking about this. It's interesting how the red states are getting redder and more populated. The blue states seem to be getting bluer and less populated. So I think that tells you, where the American people are. So where does New York end up? I think the situation just gets worse. But, the truckers are a great example. You can't do what you did to President Trump. Love Trump or hate Trump, Trump's got a rabid following. And they're standing up and saying, look, it's time we do something. And I think you're seeing more and more of that. Personally, I think that that's what's going to take. I mean, To quote another news item, I thought it was interesting. The new president of Argentina balanced the budget and had a surplus 9 weeks after entering office. I think we need an Argentina moment. And as painful as that would be, it's going to be a lot less painful than, enduring this hyperinflationary outcome that I think is inevitable if we continue on this path.
Yeah, well, it's certainly economic collapse on the horizon.
We will get back to the rest of that interview in segment three. Before we do, however, let me remind you, if you are just tuning in, that I do have the March special report, which is the little black book on Social Security maximization. To get your copy of that book absolutely free, visit requestyourreport.com. Let me know where to mail you the book, and I'll be very glad to do so. Stay tuned. The interview with Kerry Lutz will continue after these words. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. In this segment, we'll get back to the interview that I did with Kerry Lutz this past week. We're going to pick the interview up. Kerry had just asked me about my forecast for the economy, and I had suggested that if we stayed on the current path, that we would be looking at an inflationary or hyperinflationary outcome. We will pick up the interview there.
I'm sure you've been watching gold. As we're speaking, gold is up $17 the ounce today on the spot market at $21.44. All-time record highs. Doesn't look like anything is standing in its way of making more highs, does it?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it before we started this interview. It actually hit 21.55, so evidently it's pulled back a little bit. And Bitcoin also all-time new highs. Bitcoin at about 66,000. So what does that tell you about people looking for alternatives to the U.S. dollar? Another interesting story, you've got a lot of insider selling going on in the U.S. stock market. You've got Bezos selling, I think, $4 billion of Amazon stock. You've got Jamie Dimon, I think for the first time ever, unloading some of J.P. Morgan Chase stock. You've got Zuckerberg selling stock. So are they concerned about the stock market, or are they diversifying out of U.S. dollars? I don't know the answer to that. They don't talk to me. Yeah. But given what you see happening with gold and Bitcoin, I think it's a fair question.
I think it's a very fair question, and I'd like to know the answer to it, honestly. Something is afoot, and we've got all these awful geopolitical trends taking place. All of this is happening here before our very eyes, and you know, you got to wonder, is there a trend? Is there something happening here that we're not seeing?
Well, and you know, there's just crazy headlines. You may remember back in the day, you know, when I was 20 years old, I didn't have the money to afford a nice car, but mm-hmm. I wanted to have a nice car because girls like nice cars. And I would go through and peruse the used car ads, and they would say, take over payments for this car. People got themselves upside down in cars, and they just wanted somebody to relieve the burden. Well, now you're seeing office buildings presently being sold the same way. Mm-hmm. The Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board recently sold their interest in a Manhattan office tower development. You probably saw it for $1, just take over payments. What does that tell you about some, obviously they must be pretty savvy, astute people running a pension fund. And they say, you know what? Take over payments. We just want out. Well, what does that tell you about the future of commercial real estate? You know, we've got so much debt on the public balance sheets, so much debt in the private sector that we're going to have some type of a forced debt jubilee because this not all this debt can be paid. And I think these are symptoms that we're now maybe seeing the beginning of that forced jubilee process.
I think you're right. And what choice do we really have other than a jubilee, Dennis?
Well, I mean, the math is the math. So I'm reminded, I live in Michigan. I'm reminded of when the city of Detroit declared bankruptcy, and I interviewed people on my radio show that were debating whether or not federal law would supersede state law or state law would supersede.
I remember that.
Law. Yeah. So it's like, who's going to get paid? Well, maybe I'm not the smartest guy in the world, Gary, but I happen to know if there's no money in the checkbook, somebody's not going to get paid. And that's really where we are. So there's too much debt to be paid. We know it won't be paid. So that is deflationary in nature. And the Federal Reserve's response to government debt has been creating currency. So, you know, I'm looking for a stagflationary environment. I think we're going to see a decline in the value of things we own for the most part, with probably, you know, gold, silver, and those types of things being the exception, maybe some types of real estate. And I think we're going to see more inflation in the consumer items that we have to buy.
Yeah, well, hey, even if the inflation rate goes down to 2 or 3%, it's still 20% higher than it was a few years ago. So you're still paying 20% more. And, you know, the middle class in these cases, Dennis, always playing catch up, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the statistics, I recently read a report. It read more like propaganda to me, but I'll call it a report.
Imagine that.
And it said that, you know, despite inflation, wages have kept pace with inflation. Well, that's if you use the official inflation rate as measured by the consumer price index. But you and I both know that is a completely bogus, completely manipulated number. You know, there's hedonic adjustments, there's substitution adjustments, there's weighting adjustments. And, you know, bureaucrats can change the weightings, change the substitutions to arrive at whatever number really they want to arrive at. And the bottom line is when you've got 67% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, I think was the last number that I saw, and personal debt in every category, credit card debt, auto debt, mortgage debt, all up in the fourth quarter, you know what people are doing to make ends meet. They're adding to debt, and that is not a sustainable situation. And that's where I think you're starting to see a lot of these signs that we're getting close to this moment of reckoning.
All right. So in every, like the old Chinese character for crisis, danger and opportunity, we're in a dangerous time period now. Where are the opportunities?
Well, I am a big fan of precious metals at this point. I think gold and silver both have a lot of upside. I recently interviewed John Rubino, who wrote a book with James Turk 11, 12 years ago called The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. It was really a prophecy. But John just was talking about the fact that here's a way that silver quickly gets to over $100 an ounce. And it had to do with not only monetary policy, but really industrial demand versus mining output. There's a lot more industrial demand now than there is mining output. And if you look at gold, look at the last two gold bull markets, and we see 700 to 800% as being the top to bottom movement. This started at, just call it a little over 1,000. We're now at about 2,000. So I think you'll see gold go to $7,000 or $8,000 if it only does what it did in past bull markets. I would argue the current situation is more extreme. And you might see a guy like Jim Rickards who said 15,000. You know, that wouldn't surprise me either. So I think if I am listening to this and I'm someone who's aspiring to a comfortable, stress-free retirement, I'm going to ask myself, what assets do I have in my portfolio that do not have counterparty risk? And what assets do I have in my portfolio that they can't print? I think those are two very important questions.
And maybe that they can't steal when things get really desperate, because governments have been known to confiscate wealth. I mean, when things get really bad, it's happening in China right now as we speak. And that's the 800-pound gorilla. As bad as it is in the United States, we do have a record 200 years of dealing with financial crises. And maybe this is the worst one ever, but the country has actually dealt with it, has a structure in place to deal with these crises. Maybe we don't like the way they deal with them, but the show goes on. In China, it's kind of like they only learned how to drive, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Worst drivers on the planet, because they just don't have the knowledge base. And it's the same with their economy. They have no idea what to do. They had the largest asset bubble, asset class in the world, which was real estate, $60 trillion asset that's now worth probably about $9 trillion. But it's the emperor has no clothes. Nobody wants to admit that the, you know, Warren Buffett, you don't know who's skinny dipping until the tide goes out, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, speaking of China, I mean, you could recognize this bubble. I want to say it's 8 or 9 years ago when, you know, they're building cities nobody lives in, factories nobody works in, and they're passing laws that say if you're a family, you can only own two pieces of real estate. And there was this cottage industry in China that popped up that would give you and your spouse a fake divorce certificate so you could buy four pieces of real estate instead of two. That is absolute lunacy. It's borderline psychotic, and yet that tells you that's bubble behavior. That happens at the top of every bubble.
Hey, you know, like this could be a good TV show where the couple gets divorced and they buy real estate, and then the wife said, but we didn't really mean it. And the husband said, yes, we did. Goodbye. And then he leaves and moves to the U.S. But hey, we got to wrap up now. But your top three picks for 2024?
Top three picks, investment wise.
Yes,
I'll say number one, silver; number two, gold; number three, agricultural real estate.
Love it. All right, Dennis, just tell us where we find you. How do we get your book, and how we connect with you on the web?
You can go to revenuesourcingbook.com. My best-selling book from 2020 has been revamped, rewritten for 2024. If you go to revenuesourcingbook.com, I'd be glad to send you a copy. You can also check out my podcast on any place there's podcasts, Spotify, Apple.
All right.
Any place there are, Retirement Lifestyle Advocates Radio.
All right. Very cool. Thanks so much for coming by, Dennis. We'll talk to you again real soon. Be well.
Enjoyed it, Gary. Thank you so much. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Hope you enjoyed my interview with Carrie Lutz. And if you're just tuning in, I'd like to remind you that I'm making available my little black book on Social Security maximization during the month of March. To get your free copy of this book to help you maximize your benefits from Social Security, you can simply visit the website requestyourreport.com. Let me know where to mail your copy of the book, and I will be very glad to do so. You know, in the first segment of today's program, I talked about the fact that Senator Bernie Sanders released a report titled "A Secure Retirement for All," and a rather alarming statistic was really brought to everyone's attention in the report, and that is that half of all Americans age 65 and older are living on less than $30,000 a year. And of course, predictably, they're talking about to strengthen the program. We have to have more contributions to the program, more taxes to the program. And I made the point in the first segment that every time the program has been strengthened, it's resulted in a bigger underfunding liability and higher taxes. Presently, the Social Security program is more than $61 trillion underfunded. Now, some of you listening to the first segment may have said, well, what about the Social Security Trust Fund? Well, as it relates to the trust fund, let me give you an excerpt about the Social Security Trust Fund taken directly from the Social Security Administration's website. Now, if you go to retirementlifestyleadvocates.com, I have a link to this article, to this website, so you can go read it for yourself. But this is exactly what it says on the website. This is, again, the Social Security Administration's website. By law, income to the trust funds must be invested on a daily basis in securities guaranteed as both to principal and interest by the federal government. All securities held by the trust funds are special issues of the United States Treasury. Such securities are available only to the trust funds. End quote. So what does that mean? It means that the government has a special type of bond that is only available to the Social Security Trust Fund. No one else can buy it. Now, let me go back and finish this quote from the website. And again, here I quote, "In the past, the trust funds have held marketable treasury securities, which are available to the general public. Unlike marketable securities, special issues can be redeemed at any time at face value. Marketable securities are subject to the forces of the open market and may suffer a loss or enjoy a gain if sold before maturity. Investment in special issues give the trust funds the same flexibility as holding cash." End quote. So what does that mean? Well, it means the Social Security Trust Fund contains government debt as assets. Treasury securities, that's government debt. So what about the Social Security taxes that the Treasury collects? Currently, $1.6 trillion a year plus. That cash is pulled from the Social Security Trust Fund and replaced with special issue securities. The cash goes to the Treasury General Account and is used for any purpose. Now, I'm not making this up. Let me give you another excerpt from the Social Security Administration's website. Quote, "Tax income is deposited on a daily basis and is invested in special issue securities. The cash exchange for the securities goes into the general fund of the Treasury and is indistinguishable from other cash in the general fund." End quote. Let me read that again. Tax income is deposited on a daily basis and is invested in special issue securities. The cash exchange for the securities goes into the general fund of the Treasury and is indistinguishable from other cash in the general fund. So that means Social Security taxes end up in the general fund, and the Social Security Trust Fund contains government IOUs. So despite the nice-sounding political rhetoric, and I would even argue despite what is likely very good intentions, strengthening the Social Security program would inevitably result in more government debt. And need I point out again that the federal government is adding $1 trillion in debt every 100 days? I'm going to give you something on that in just a moment. Now, how can I be so sure that strengthening the program, as Senator Sanders is suggesting, would actually result in more government debt? Well, the reality is the Social Security program has been around for 89 years this year. Every time, you can underline every time, changes have been made to the program to enhance it, taxes have increased, and so have the unfunded liabilities of the program. While Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen didn't address this specifically, She did release a report, and the link again is on my website at retirementlifestyleadvocates.com. And the Treasury Secretary stated that both Social Security and Medicare were underfunded by more than $173 trillion. That is a monster number. Government debts, $34 trillion, which is in and of itself a mammoth number. But Social Security and Medicare are underfunded by $173 trillion, five times plus the level of the current national debt. Now, Yellen stated this, current policies, quote, are not sustainable and must ultimately change, end quote. She's right. The brutal truth is there is simply no money to strengthen the program. Now, interestingly, we have a lot of mainstream economists now coming out and talking about this. There was an article in Business Insider this past week. The headline of the article said a hard landing recession is guaranteed in the future after the full impact of Fed rate hikes hit the economy. That's according to Morgan Stanley's chief economist. Now, Ellen Zentner is the chief economist at Morgan Stanley. She said this, a hard landing recession is certain to come for the economy, and high rates, meaning high interest rates, are to blame, even as markets start positioning for the Federal Reserve to loosen monetary policy this year. Now, Zentner was interviewed on CNBC, and she responded to Jamie Dimon's recent comments on the economy. Now, if you don't know who Jamie Dimon is, he is the CEO of JP Morgan. Now, Mr. Dimon suggested that the chance of a soft landing was about half of the 70 to 80% odds other forecasters were predicting. In other words, Dimon says, fat chance we get a soft landing. He said that was because of several risks still facing the U.S., including the Fed's tightening campaign, geopolitical conflict, and interest rates, which central bankers have said could remain higher for longer. Keep in mind, interest rates in the historical scheme of things are not even back up to what would be considered a normal level, and yet it's negatively impacting the U.S. economy and U.S. government debt. That simply tells you we're coming out of a very artificial period, economically speaking, since the financial crisis, which is now about 15 years ago. Now, back to Zentner, the chief economist at Morgan Stanley. She said she expects the U.S. will avoid a recession this year, but she said a hard landing is unavoidable. In the interview, she said this, quote, we will have a hard landing at some point, I guarantee you that. We're all wondering, when does that come? The point that Dimon makes is that there are these cumulative impacts that build over time. And we're in the camp that we haven't seen all the tightening impacts from monetary policy. I certainly agree with Ms. Zentner. When you take a look at rate cuts, it takes some time for rate cuts to actually have their effects felt. The same is true on tightening. Now, it's been about 18 months ago that the Fed increased interest rates, and we're now seeing the impact on the economy. So I am expecting that we will see more economic stress, and the Fed will be forced to reverse course simply because there is no other choice. Now, when you request my little black book on Social Security maximization, I'm going to also send you some bonus materials on this topic. Go to requestyourreport.com. I'll be glad to send you all that information for free. Again, the website, requestyourreport.com.